I'm Gary Knoll, and this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. The theme today? What if much of the information we've been given from the officials in Washington about the COVID-19 virus and the World Health Organization is wrong? Just out and out wrong, including the tests that they are determining if you have it or not. The PCR, polymerase chain reaction, to understand the problems that we are facing beyond the virus itself, we have invited Celia Farber, one of America's most hard-hitting and impassioned investigative reporters, multi-award-winning in all areas that she covers, and she goes way back, many, many years, over 30 years, in doing her stories for Spin Magazine and in other major organizations that used her work. And so we're going to talk with her for this hour. Nice to have you with us today, Celia.
Thank you, Gary. Nice to be here.
And take us on this journey of what we are being told to give us some confidence that what we're doing is scientifically sound, and what your research, interviewing outstanding scientists and physicians and other journalists, has led you to believe concerning this part of the puzzle, this PCR test, and it's supposed detecting a person that has the coronavirus. The forum is yours.
Thank you, Gary. Well, what's very important in this situation is to understand what we came out of. COVID mentality tyranny comes out of the groundwork that was laid by the HIV AIDS industrial complex. I chronicled that story, as you said. Thank you so much for your generous introduction. I covered that story, as you did, for the war that raged between the orthodoxy, where all the power and all the money was, and the elite of American scientists, who objected vociferously and consistently to what I came to call postmodern virology, which is a kind way to say it. It could also be called, frankly, psychotic virology or paranormal virology, because what starts to happen in the mid-80s, as you know very well, is that the media begins to broadcast notions about virology, serology, testing, spread, that are not recognized in classical virology up to that point in history. And they begin to terrorize people with unfounded assertions about novel viruses that have jumped species and are spreading this way and that. And they set in motion a pandemic of testing and a pandemic of terror. Now, with HIV, I was stunned when the COVID tidal wave hit to see that they were using PCR as the technique at the root of the COVID test, because that was worse even than all the worst of HIV/AIDS science. PCR was used in HIV/AIDS. It came in to the playing field when Peter Duisberg had challenged the field, had really shaken the field with his challenge in 1987. The core of his challenge was to say, how can you all say that a retrovirus can cause a disease? A disease like this is caused by mass cell destruction. This retrovirus, and I know it gets more complicated, is there such a thing and so forth, but let's just quote Duisberg for now. This retrovirus, like all retroviruses, cannot cause AIDS because it requires mass killing of cells. Retroviruses don't kill cells. This one is no different. Duisberg's challenge resulted, of course, in Duisberg being targeted, eliminated from NIH funding under the direct command of Anthony Fauci. He was and is the top retrovirologist in the field. Fauci gave the command he will not get one more federal research dollar because he has committed the sin of going against us and saying you cannot prove this hypothesis. It's false. It's a falsehood to say that a retrovirus could do this. It wasn't just saying it was wrong. It was saying that at its root, they were accusing I'm not going to say pathogen because that's giving it too much credit. They were accusing an organism about which it had previously been agreed upon this kind of organism does not cause any problem. In fact, retroviruses were used as cellular transporters in so-called genetic gene therapy, i.e. they were widely agreed upon to be harmless. So I used to say this was the equivalent of, let's say suddenly there's an automobile conference, a car conference, and suddenly everybody at the conference has to agree that cars fly. Cars never flew before. What's with this flying car? That was how utter Duisberg's critique was. So the whole industry, the whole field turns against Duisberg, calls him a mass murderer, sends out the threat. Anybody who comes near him or agrees with him will be similarly targeted, defunded, stigmatized, accused of murder, the whole nine yards. A few years into this, early 90s, they say, with PCR, polymerase chain reaction, Duisberg is finished because guess what? Now we can see that the virus is so much more ubiquitous than we thought. PCR being a DNA amplification technique that takes a tiny molecule of DNA, shines fluorescent light on it, doubles the molecule every cycle, the amount of DNA that you have doubles. And very quickly can go to something like 30 billion times the size that you began with. So what that means is it's a magnificent criminal forensic technique. PCR has many applications. But the evil came in when they said, we're going to scare people biologically with this and say that this evil virus is so rampant now in your cells. Well, the first person who screamed bloody murder about this was the inventor of PCR, who was, all clear up until he died, Kerry Mullis. He was a staunch ally of Peter Duisberg and very strongly said HIV has never been proven to cause AIDS, and I don't want my name on this thing, and I don't want you people using my invention to crush Duisberg, because all you have shown is that my technique takes the same amount of little to nothing and blows it up and makes it easier to see. It doesn't make more of it. So let me just pause for a second. Am I clear so far?
Yes.
Okay. So with that, now Kerry Mullis, I'm not sure how significant this is right here and now, but I'll just say it. He never held the patent for PCR. He was working on contracts for the biotech company. Trying to remember the name of it now. Was it Cetus? And so they held the patent for PCR. Kerry Mullis obviously had no say on how PCR would be applied in the culture. I'm glad he's not here. He's not alive to see this. Because now what they have done is taken PCR and terrorized the entire world with it. PCR is the technique used in virtually all so-called COVID tests. Kerry Mullis was very clear it was not designed to detect a viral infection and must not be used for that purpose. And the reason you called me to be on this show is because I wrote an article about this, because I said, wait a minute, I've got to tell people, I've got to show them the father of PCR, who he was, what he said, what he sounded like, to humanize this whole thing. Because average person cannot be expected to understand what the technique is behind the test. They're told it's a COVID test. Do I have it or don't I have it? Now, why is this so pernicious? Well, let's double back to HIV/AIDS for a moment. I said that this was worse even than the tricks they pulled with HIV/AIDS, because in HIV/AIDS, they introduced PCR not to diagnose, but to do a different thing from their bag of terror tricks, which was to get people crazy who were HIV positive about how much so-called viral load they had. So you see, they build it into the language. Viral load, that sounds really bad. But am I going to die? Am I going to die? Okay, I'm already positive, but let me test my viral load. And of course, the protease inhibitor cocktail therapy was aimed at lowering viral load. And the idea was that if you lower viral load, you extend your life. Now, that's another can of worms and another show. But they didn't use PCR for diagnostic purposes. With COVID, all of a sudden, let me tell you what's on the market right now, not FDA approved, but on the market. And this is just last I was able to get the number, which is at the end of May, there were 70 tests on the market in the U.S. alone, COVID tests. The overwhelming majority, I want to say all of them, but I can't swear it's every last one, are PCR tests. So these are different rapid RNA PCR tests. Okay. They are not FDA approved. Here's another trick. There's something called the Emergency Use Authorization. When there's a real crisis and the FDA doesn't have time to see if a test really works or is sound, they're going to shove that all down in the little footnotes and the asterisks of the test inserts, which will be read by nobody. So down there it says, no test is perfect. It's just, I really would urge everybody, if they can stand it, open up these tests and read them, and you will see how these companies have created legal loopholes and caveats for themselves, lest somebody were to try to sue them and say, you made me think I was going to die, but your test can't actually promise anything. I read in the Wall Street Journal last week, the first sentence, I don't have the exact sentence in front of me, but I remember it well, and I'm going to quote essentially what it said. It was about unreliability of the COVID PCR test, and it was in the Wall Street Journal. And it said, such and such person was tested for COVID. Three tests were positive. Three tests were negative. Does that sound like a test that would tell a person anything at all?
No, obvious.
Right. Obviously not. So what we have here is an absolutely mind-boggling pandemic of incoherent testing. And President Trump is standing up there, and Vice President Pence is standing up there, and they're talking about America and the leader and how many tests we've done. And it's absolute psychobabble. And what people should, so this is also where all the geopolitical decisions, all the repressions come from. The word cases, cases. What do we mean by cases? My God in heaven, we mean a positive PCR test, i.e. zip, zero, nothing, no, has no bearing on either clinical illness or what you might expect about clinical illness to come. nothing. And what people should be talking about is whether a person has the syndrome, the illness that we vaguely, I should say, agree falls in the realm of what seems to be a new illness called COVID-19, about which I think there are also many question marks. What is the syndrome? What is the illness? And I'm sure you know all about that.
I do.
Yeah. My article that was published in UncoverDC.com, which I brought back Carey Mullis's voice about HIV. He didn't live long enough to address COVID. I think he died about a year ago, maybe a year and a half. That matters because you can see how the industries found this new toy and had a lot of time to get ready to use it. And I can't imagine anything more sinister than to use a PCR test for a coronavirus infection. Now, there's another test, as you mentioned, which is the antibody test. You can probably speak to the antibody test they use for COVID more than I can. I didn't really delve into that when I delved into the PCR test. And the voice today, speaking today in my article, who is so learned and so brilliant on this, is PRN's very own David Crowe, host of The Infectious Myth. He actually went in, read all the papers, how they established what's a positive and what's a negative on a COVID PCR test. And the thing that shocked me that I did not know is that they have a spectrum, I think would be the word. They have an arbitrary cutoff point. It's a number of cycles. They cycled PCR tests. They take this one molecule. They shine fluorescent light on it. The light bounces back. It's incredibly sci-fi. And so I think one mistake we make is to think that because something is what they call sensitive, it's that it's better, and that is not the case. What happens
goes a little further than that. Our problem with the antibody activity of vaccines, and that's where we're headed, not just to a vaccine that will be probably a Bill Gates-sponsored vaccine, since he's putting huge amounts of money behind multiple major vaccine-making companies, is that whoever gets the vaccine out first will probably get most of the world government's contracts, and you're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars, possibly even more than $1 trillion, and it'll be the greatest financial gain in history as far as anyone making the money. And it's all based upon, well, this is going to protect you, and it's going to protect you because it's going to provide antibodies, like all of the vaccines. The trouble is, to this date, there is no scientific proof that a given vaccine, whether it's the MMR or hepatitis, chickenpox, measles, whooping cough, in and of itself can create protective antibodies for life. Breast milk will, getting the diseases early in life. You get chickenpox, mumps, measles early in life. You won't get it the rest of your life. But then the antibodies with coronavirus have been shown not to be protective in all people. In fact, some people have had coronavirus infections 2 or 3, 4 times, and it's non-protective. So they're starting off with faulty science. And so the fact that we're going to be people these very toxic substances with the idea it's going to create antibodies when there's no proof. For example, we have people that are not producing antibodies who are protected, and people who have all the antibodies from a vaccine and are not protected. The example are people with measles, all their shots, mumps, their shots, chickenpox, their shots, will come down with those illnesses. If it was protective, they wouldn't come down. And not only do they come down with the illness, they frequently come down with a far more virulent form of the illness. And then their immune system is substantially challenged. Well, the one thing in all this that no one's talking about is, what can we do to prevent ourselves from getting sick in the first place or minimize the opportunity? If we had, do you remember the old Tri-State Healing Center where I helped a lot of people, thousands and thousands of people, including I worked with 1,200 people with full-blown AIDS, and I reversed 18 people's going from HIV positive and AIDS to zero and total health. It was all about building the immune system. And that was fully documented. And yet today, instead of going into nursing homes and putting hyperbaric oxygen chambers, vitamin C drips, giving them a healthy diet and juices and vitamin D, et cetera, no, we're giving them drugs that have not been shown to be effective, or intubation and respirators that are highly ineffective at helping a person who's got the coronavirus, and hence in some cases killing every single person. And the nurses are seeing it, and nurses are screaming out inside. They've done secret recordings of what goes on. And doctors are, including pulmonologists, are screaming out. But the American media is complicit. The American media at this moment will do anything to keep control of the narrative. And as they've done for the last, since Trump was elected now. I don't happen to like Donald Trump, and he would not be the person I would vote for. But I don't want to see a coup, and that's what we saw for 3 years, lying about Russia, Russia, Russia. Then it's, you know, then it's COVID, 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 and draconian rules. And I can't believe that the media will not allow reasoned medical doctors and contrary scientists on the air and let them say why what we're doing concerning COVID is not working and why we are talking, we're not looking at the fact that it is far more pervasive in our society than what we were told, and yet it's far less deadly than what we were told, because they have death as their number one thing. If you get the virus, you could die, instead of looking at the fact that 99.7% of the people who get the virus are not going to die. So they're not allowing the people on who are the experts to give that information. They keep allowing the same fear mongers on. So they've weaponized the whole argument about COVID. And I'm very disappointed in the American media and New York Times and others for doing this. Your final thoughts on this, please.
Yes, I just wanted to add about, I want people to see this visually. So I think people go in with this test thinking, I want to know if I have it or if I don't. Like you would go into a pregnancy test is a good test and it works. You're either pregnant or you're not. There are random cutoff points that are different for different labs for how many cycles. Let's say the lab says we're going to set a positive at 37 cycles and we're going to set a negative at 38. It's very tedious and hard to cope with looking at this stuff, but you have to understand the randomness of the science underlying it, that different, again, and this was the same with the HIV test with the so-called HIV dissidents were objecting to and decrying, was the fact that there were always different standards for what makes a test positive for HIV. And guess where the standard was highest to meet? Well, in the Western world, it was a matter of proteins. You only needed 2 proteins to test positive in Africa. You needed 5 in Australia. So we used to joke, well, then you could be HIV positive and you could fly in Africa, in Uganda, let's say, then you could fly to Australia and get yourself retested and clear that positive status. Why? Because it's a different country and the lab standard is different. Now, this is crazy stuff, and people don't know this. They have to know this. They're playing so many games with us. So what should people do? Well, they should know that the science underlying all of this is it's not solid. It's exactly the same as the financial system. There's no gold standard. It's very similar to the financial system. People understand that we're caught in this terrible spiral of debt, and I call this debt-based medicine. You're supposed to be terrified of COVID, even if you feel fine, run around, get tested, and a test you're not allowed to know anything about what it means. What should people do? They should just try to break the spell. break the spell. Can people defy it? Somebody very close to me in my family has been asked to get a COVID test in advance of going. Some people are gathering out in the country and in a house, and the person who owns the house has said everybody has to get tested. This is the new, you know, the new normal. So what do you do? Do you say, I'm not coming to the gathering because I don't believe in the test? More likely, you know, you get tested and you go along and you play along because they're blocking life all over the place. You kind of have to go along, and everybody's negotiating for themselves. Should I wear the mask? Should I do the test? Should I? I'd like to know what you offer to people, because people are asking me, and it's very confusing. The whole thing about should people defy it or should people go along and do the best they can, even if they know it's false.
Well, what I do, I would not take any tests until there's a gold standard universally showing that the test is accurate. Right now, no such tests exist. No such tests exist. I also do not believe that the treatment that they're giving works anywhere. And I believe that they've been extremely negligent because they should have isolated all senior citizens or people who have comorbidities. And now the newest comorbidity is obesity. So therefore, they should set up centers where people don't get drugged, they get help with their underlying disease, if it's diabetes or heart failure or emphysema, and working with the best therapies we can for those. Otherwise, I believe everybody should be getting sunshine and should be keeping their life as hygienic as possible, but also vitamin D, vitamin C, selenium, astragalus, powdiarco, colloidal silver, olive leaf extract, and let's see, what else? Those are the main immune-enhancing nutrients that have been shown to work. And this comes from the peer-reviewed literature. I wrote an article on natural ways to help your immune system get stronger. And then, of course, go to a plant-based healthy diet with lots of juicing, exercise, and deal with your issues more appropriately. That's what prevents all illnesses, not just a viral illness or a bacterial illness. And then pay attention. If you've ever noticed on the occasions that we have spoken, I always use a paper towel to open a doorknob. I have an envelope where I have money that I wash. And as a result, I keep clean money, because money is one of the most dirty things you can put. Thousands of bacteria per dollar bill. So I just pay with a paper towel and an envelope. And my friends have always thought that was rather, you know, eccentric, and fine, let them think that. I also put a napkin down on top of the table when I'm in a restaurant and I eat with chopsticks or bring my own silverware, and I don't drink out of their, I don't drink with a meal anyhow, but I'm having owned three very successful vegan restaurants, I know even under the strictest of hygienic principles how easy it is cross-contaminate something, especially when people sneeze in their hand, cough in their hand, and then go about touching things. These are just common sense things. And isn't it interesting? It took a COVID virus and the emphasis upon hygiene for us to actually practice hygiene. It means all these decades we have been so unhygienic. And by the way, the cost of this is enormous. There are hundreds of millions of food poisonings per year, thousands of deaths, contaminated water also, and we don't pay attention. We just go about very nonchalantly our life without thinking that our actions are going to make a difference. They do, and people are sickened and died on an annual basis because of it. So it's galvanized our attention. These are just basic things I would suggest people do.
But Gary, do you believe the core model, not believe, have you seen evidence for the core model that a coronavirus, a new one from the coronavirus family, jump species at a wet market in China, came over on airplanes and spread like this? I think this is...
No, let me be very specific here, because I don't want people to share my opinion. I want them to share really good science on that. We now have some science. Let me just give you some of the latest information on this. We can accurately state that, and this is, I'm reporting from A Wuhan lab took delivery of world's deadliest viruses months prior to coronavirus outbreak. This is from Summit News. Quote, a report out of Canada confirms that the Wuhan Institute of Virology took a shipment of some of the world's deadliest pathogens just weeks before the outbreak of the coronavirus. CBS News reports the newly released documents show that a shipment from the National Microbiology Lab in Winnipeg, Canada, was sent to the Wuhan Institute in early 2019. The report also notes that the scientist who oversaw the shipment, a Dr. Kui, was removed from Canada's Level 4 bio lab following an investigation concerning, quote, policy breach, end quote. Canadian officials have said that both the shipment of deadly viruses and the punishing of the scientists were not connected to the coronavirus outbreak in any way. However, Amir Atran, a law professor and epidemiologist at the University of Ottawa, told CBS News, quote, it is suspicious, it is alarming, and it is potentially life-threatening. What we know is that before she was removed, she sent one of the deadliest viruses on Earth and multiple varieties of it to maximize the genetic diversity and maximize what experiments in China could do with it to a laboratory in China that does dangerous gain of function experiments, end quote. And that has links to the Chinese military, the epidemiologist also noted. And the findings provide more proof that the Wuhan lab was tampering with natural pathogens and mutating them to become more infectious. That's what the word that he just mentioned here are the few words about a dangerous gain of function. You're making them more biologically active, but what they would do with them, we don't know. Now, separate from that, here is a report from the Off-Guardian, quote, over 95% of United Kingdom COVID-19 deaths had, quote, pre-existing conditions. Latest statistics show vast majority of fatalities had at least one other disease. Over 95% of COVID deaths recorded in England and Wales had potentially serious comorbidities, according to the National Health Services England. The latest figures make for pretty stark reading, or rather, they would make for stark reading if they didn't follow the exact same pattern already shown in other nations around the world. And then it talks about how the average age of the person dying was about 80. And so we're not told the full truth. And then here's another piece from Unheard from Ian Burrell. So where did COVID come from? Quote, it's not mere conspiracy theory to ask if this new coronavirus leaked from a Wuhan lab. Last year, Yuan Zeming published an article in the Journal of Biosafety and Biosecurity confessing to concerns about high-security laboratories in China. He admitted maintenance costs were, quote, generally neglected, and several of their top-level research centers lacked sufficient funds for, quote, routine yet vital processes. He said openly that, quote, part-time researchers perform the work of skilled staff, which, quote, makes it difficult to identify and mitigate potential safety hazards. In a second article, co-authored with four colleagues, he wrote that their biosafety systems needed to be, quote, further improved and strengthened. Today, his words carry greater significance, for Professor Yuhan is head of biosafety at Wuhan Institute of Virology, the first lab in China with top-level biosecurity status. It carries out cutting-edge research into bat viruses and has been named by the U.S. president as a possible source of the coronavirus behind the global pandemic. But Yuhan now denies there's any chance this disease came from them. So what we can say now is that, yes, there was research going on with one of the world, if not the world's leading authority on bats, but also we are suspicious that this may also have been possible that the bats infected pigs, and then people who ate the pigs became themselves infected. And Charles Ortlieb, who you know very well, the publisher of the New York Native for a long time, he has been on top of this, but the mainstream media won't touch it. And yet in places where there is distance way far away from any metropolitan center, way out in the country in Iowa, in pig farms, there's a very high incidence of infection and even death from the from the COVID-19 virus because the pigs there. And now this is not the first time pigs have been slaughtered by the millions historically in countries, including China, because they had the swine fever, for example. And so we may have multiple vectors here. But if you want me to believe that this came from a fresh market and it's just naturally transferred itself from a bat to fish or food, that is simply not the case, because too many people who are experts in biology have pointed out that the way this virus looks, it was artificially manufactured. It did not come naturally, even though part of it is going to be natural, but it was changed. Now, why it was changed, that we do not know. The likelihood is at this moment, I would bet that it came by accident out of that laboratory, and then someone was infected, didn't know it, and then started to spread, and they had to cover it up, as China is notorious for covering up all of its sins and omissions. So that's what I know at this moment.
Well, Gary, I don't want to be a troublemaker, but I haven't seen, and I wonder if you have evidence for a causation model. When you did great work interviewing Janine Roberts, who we both knew well, and let's go back to what she said. She went back to the original Bob Gallo lab notes. Remember this?
Yes, there's, I do.
So you and I both know there was never a causation model for HIV. There was a press conference, and then it was launched through media propaganda and sustained through media propaganda. What's a causation model? That means the pathogen has fulfilled Koch's postulate. It has been properly purified. It has been found to recreate the same disease in an animal model, recreate an infection when reinfected in another host. All you know what Koch's postulates are. This thing, I don't see any of that. It just, boom, comes out of the media. It doesn't even have a bad father like Bob Gallo. It has no father. It has no causation model. Do you disagree with what I'm saying here? Are you convinced that there is a pathogen that is causing something we can cogently call COVID-19?
We do not have enough information that is objective and honest to review. What we have are bits and pieces. We're like all the men, blind men in a room touching an elephant, and everyone comes up that it's something else but not an elephant. I believe that we have well-intentioned scientists and physicians and nurses who are working with the patients, but look at what they've done up to this point. Look at what they're doing. They're giving medications that don't work. They are co-mixing people who are infected with non-infected people. We know that whatever this ultimately is shown to be, it is easily transmitted. We also show it is not as deadly for the average person. We know that the media, instead of looking at this like they do the flu or emphysema or any other normal virus and the COVID other viruses, and that's why they've never had a vaccine, because you don't have a vaccine for the cold, because it's constantly changing, that we only have a small part of the picture. Until such time that they have universal acceptance of what it is, and was it artificially created, and why would it be artificially created, and who did this, and then what models do they have to show the rate of its infectivity, and have they experimented with it so they could come forward and say, here's what we know about this virus, A, B, C, D. They haven't been able to do that. So everything has been politicized, and they've weaponized the argument. If you challenge them on any fact, you're taken off Facebook, you're taken off Google. The doctor who is the board-certified pulmonologist and emergency doctor who went on YouTube and was very concerned, he said, we're intubating people that we shouldn't, put them on respirators when we shouldn't because this thing's acting differently. He was right. He was scrubbed. When the nurse went on and she was crying and she says, I'm seeing people die every day who shouldn't die because it's negligence. The doctors and other nurses are not treating these people correctly. Scrubbed. The other doctor, the other nurse, I should say, who went on and put on some glasses that recorded what she was seeing when she saw how much was going wrong. Everything was going wrong, she said. Nothing was being done right. And again, it was there for a moment and scrubbed. None of these people, including the two physicians from California who said that what we've done in putting people in their homes is wrong, scrubbed. Dr. Russell Blaylock, a neurosurgeon, who said that the masks themselves are capable, if you had the virus, you're breathing back in the virus, and it's going back up into your nasal cavities and reinfecting them or hyperinfecting your nasal cavities, and that can lead to it infecting your brain and your lungs. No interviews. So all the people who've come forward, of which there are about 50, not one of them has been interviewed by anyone in the mainstream media. Instead, they're, quote, conspiracy theorists. Well, I might mention that for those who talk about conspiracy theorists based upon history, they were right. You know, the Gulf of Tonkin resolution was actually happened. Weapons of mass destruction. Those lies got us into Iraq. So we see that we've been a country that has constantly lied about everything, and yet we don't know the truth about this condition. So I cannot and will not at this time make any definitive statement because we don't have all the facts. All I know, we have contradictions to the official position. That I will say. I would not believe anything that the White House, Anthony Fauci, said. And by the way, just to dot this, what Celia was mentioning is that one of the world's greatest journalists, her name was Janine Roberts, she's the one who wrote the stories about blood diamonds in Africa and the Congo. She's the one who wrote the stories in Australia about indigenous children there being taken from their families and given to other regular families. And she wrote dozens and dozens of stories over a 40-plus year career. And she contacted me, and she came to New York, and she wouldn't discuss in her communications what she wanted to talk to me about, but she came over to her office, and she laid out these two papers on my table. He said, now, take a look at this. She said, the first paper that you see was written by the head. What was his name? Durovic? Durovic or Popovic?
Popovic.
And she said, this is written by one of the top scientists at the National Cancer Institute Virology Lab, Dr. Popovic. Now, this is supposed to go to Science Magazine. And read it carefully. So I read it. She said, what does it say? And I said, well, it doesn't say anything. She said, that's the point. It does not find an HIV virus. It does not find, in fact, to the contrary, it contradicts it. And who contradicts it? The head of the electron microscope division of the National Cancer Institute wrote, and it's clear as day right there, that there is no unique viral discovery. It's viral debris is what exactly it said.
There was no retrovirus. Right.
And as a result, then now look at this one. Now, the one on the right-hand side, I was scribbled through. Lines changed, words changed, everything completely changed. And that was when Robert Gallo got back from France. I believe he was at the Institut Pasteur trying to sell his antibody test. And he scribbled through the original conclusions of the article in Science that was supposed to be published. And he made it. Oh, we discovered this. It's ours. A, it was never theirs. It was a sample from Luc Montagnier's Institut Pasteur. But he suddenly went from one of his scientists saying, we have discovered nothing, no evidence, to, oh, yeah, we discovered it. That was then published. Gallo's altered one was published in Science Magazine, and that began the entire war on AIDS. And AIDS organizations, thousands and thousands of AIDS organizations were created, and all of science had to march in absolute lockstep to Gallo's pronouncement and Fauci's pronouncement. If they did, they got money, unlimited money. And then when the AZT was created by Burroughs-Wellcome, the drug was shown to have been deadly. It not only didn't help people, it killed people, because what AZT did, and we spoke with the person who actually created it originally at the National Cancer Institute, said it was so too toxic, shouldn't even be given to terminal cancer patients. What it would happen, you'd have HIV positive, but otherwise healthy people taking it, 1,500 milligrams a day, and they would die. And then you look at the package insert, and one of the side effects, the leading side effects of AZT, was it creates AIDS-like symptoms. So you couldn't tell if a person had AIDS or AZT toxic reactions manifest as AIDS. And so the sicker someone got, the more AZT they were given, the more drugs they were given, and that was speeded up their death. And So when we finally found this out, and we didn't, it was Janine Roberts, she didn't find this in the United States. She found this, I believe, it was in the sister Popovic's sister's home in Europe, and she brought it back, and it was the we revealed that in a press conference. Do you remember that? Over at 92nd Street.
Yes, I remember it well. Actually, I pulled it. I happen to have Janine's book on my desk. This is quick, but I'm going to read what Popovic wrote. He wrote, and I quote, "Despite intensive research efforts, the causative agent of AIDS has not yet been identified. After examining the very the samples that Gallo then went to the press conference and said," now here's Gallo's rewrite, total reversal of what Popovic found, quote, "that a retrovirus of the HTLV family might be an etiological agent of AIDS was suggested by the findings." And he also wrote in the margins, I've always been fascinated by this, "Mika," his nickname for Popovic, "Mika, are you crazy?" with several question marks. Popovic went on, he knew that Gallo would be in a rage, and he knew he would be in hot water. And my understanding of the history is he took those lab notes and flew to Switzerland and left them in safekeeping with his sister. And Gallo then famously held the press conference with the full backing of the NCI. The world's press was there, and the first wording, for everybody who doesn't know this history, even though Gary Null has been covering it since the very beginning, the press conference wording by Gallo was that, Margaret Heckler was the U.S. government has found the probable cause of AIDS. So they had that probable there. That word disappeared within 24 or 48 hours, and it became the virus that causes AIDS, and then later the AIDS virus. And once that is done, really, the thing becomes incarnated through the media, in the culture, in the psyche of people, and you basically cannot undo it. That's the problem. This is like, I'm going to use a word, this is like witchcraft.
Well, it's more than, I wouldn't call it witchcraft, Celia. I would say that it's a cult of true believers who also all profit from the myth. And in fact, Janine Roberts said that when this information was given over to a group of other scientists, we were the first to get it. We rebroadcast that up at 92nd Street in what amounted to, I think, a four-hour press conference. What happened then was the media didn't touch any of this at all. In fact, no member of the mainstream media attended. And then a letter was written to Science Magazine showing Popovic's original notes and what would have been the article going to Science Magazine, and Gallo's altered notes, and there was a whole group of some of the most distinguished scientists in the United States, in fact, from around the world, saying, please retract Gallo's article. And Science Magazine never to this day has responded. And so it shows you the power of Edward Bernays' idea of keep saying the same lie over and over and over again, keep propagandizing people, but more importantly, make sure that those that you want on your side, you're giving them something for them to stay on your side. You're giving them money. You're giving them grants. You're giving them inside access to the quarters of power. So they co-opted most of the age groups. They co-opted a lot of the gay groups. And then they started to attack people who challenged it. I wrote the first articles on this, and I did a couple documentaries on it. And then I just saw over a period of like a year, hundreds and hundreds of people who had AIDS-defining illnesses coming to the Tri-State Healing Center. And I said, what brought you here? And they said, well, I tried AZT and got deadly sick, or my partner used AZT and died. And one guy just said that that yesterday morning he woke up and he had to crawl to the bathroom. And he looked up and on the sink was a bowl of drugs, including AZT, that he had to take. And he just poured them all in the toilet. He said, I had thrush in my mouth. I had sore, open sores, and I was falling apart, and I knew I wouldn't live another 24 hours if I took another drug. And he said he had been obedient. He had gone to all the meetings. And he said, you know something, Gary? Every single one of the people in my AIDS support group died I was the only one who hadn't died yet, and I would have died. And he said, so I couldn't do anything yesterday. I just drank water, and today I'm here. Well, 16 months later, he was completely healthy, no HIV and no AIDS conditions. And that's what we found. That was our experience. And yet the media would not touch us. And one day, this very tall, lean woman, I'm talking about like 6'2", she walks into my office, and she said, Gary Noll, I said, yes. She said, I'm going to look at this. And she had like a foot thick of files, and I said, what is it? She said, I'm one of the supervisors of the AZT clinical studies at the universities in northern New York, at Syracuse and Rochester, et cetera. They're all fraudulent. Everything about the studies are fraud. It's a crime against humanity. Here are the letters I've written to the FDA, to the different authorities there, showing them that people died and they eliminated them from the study. They got sicker. They eliminated them from the study. It wasn't double blind. They tasted the tablet, and if it was sweet, they didn't want the placebo, so everyone was taking his AT. She said, this is a fraud, but they won't do anything about it. This is political now, and it's going to go through. And her name was Lynn Gannett.
Lynn Gannett, right?
Yeah, Lynn Gannett. And so I brought her on the air, and I told her story. I wrote an article about her. And yet, because the mainstream media was now in lockstep with the official version, you had the manufacturer putting out big money. You had the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease giving grants only if you followed what you were supposed to, and no dissidents were allowed. And I remember debating five medical doctors at New York University School of Medicine. I was the only one who came with information showing why AZT shouldn't be given. And they had all these activists around the room supporting, put time on your side, take AZT. I believe that because of misdirection in the war on AIDS, about a quarter million Americans alone lost their lives because of buying into the lies. Now, jump forward. And by the way, then they went on a scorched earth program of destroying every single person's reputation that didn't go in lockstep with them. Well, I just told them, go to hell. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I don't kiss anyone's ass for any reason. And so I just doubled down. I just started writing one more article after another showing the corruption of every single aspect of this, and did five award-winning documentaries on it. And now we're going after them in court. We're suing them, Wikipedia editors, for saying I'm an AIDS denier when I'm the only person on the planet that cured 18 people of full-blown AIDS. And we have the documentation and proof of it. Every single lab report, all the blood workups, real medical doctors and nurses, and journalists like Tony Brown at Tony Brown Journal, Bill McCreary, Errol Caldwell, Bill Tatum of the Amsterdam News, Doug Henderson. So we're hitting back, and we're hitting with a sledgehammer, these bastards. But unfortunately, you are right, Celia. They got away with it. Now, many of the same players are now, like Fauci, they're directing the war on COVID-19. And I believe that they're going to be making not just the same mistakes, but they're going to be supporting mandatory vaccines. In New York State, the New York Law Bar Association has already recommended mandatory vaccines with no exceptions to every resident in New York State. Now there'll be the consequences. What if you don't want to be tested? And what if you don't want to get the mandatory vaccine? Now they're using the model out of Washington State that the state has hired 3,000 people on the way to hiring thousands more that will monitor you in your home. You will have no choice. You cannot go outside. If you need to get food, they'll bring in some food. But you will be a prisoner to the state if you don't get the mandatory vaccine. That is fascism, and that's where we're at as of today. So everything being done about COVID-19, in my opinion, has been bad science. We now are hearing from good science and good physicians and good nurses and good journalists telling the truth. But they have so much control over the New York Times, Washington Post, and CNN, these other places that pretend to be objective, that I don't know that your voice, my voice, and other voices will get out. But at least we're going to keep talking because we have an example of what didn't work before. And if any doctor today gave 1,500 milligrams of AZT, they'd lose their medical license. And at a time, they were the heroes in medicine. No, they weren't. They were blind, obedient fools. And the people who were doing the best work were those people within the gay community, the AIDS community, who were getting people on natural-based diets, helping build up their immune system, dealing with the psychology and the emotional stress of having the diagnosis. So that war is not ended. It's just gone into an eclipse at this moment because COVID's taken over. But Siri, you were important in that battle. You took a beating because of your positions, but you never apologized. Good for you. I can't tell you the disdain I have for people today, you know, groveling as self-flagellating, you know, upper educated individuals saying, you know, how terrible they are. And instead of saying, I haven't done anything wrong in the war on COVID, the entire establishment has done everything wrong and they should be held accountable. Final thoughts.
First of all, you have been a one-man bulwark against all of this insanity, and I salute you. I thank you. I don't know how many lives you alone have saved, Gary, and you always told me, don't back down, don't be afraid, because that's when they get you. And you also said, don't go quiet, get louder when they come after you. So you helped me a lot, and you taught me a lot. And now, in that spirit, what I see that does give me hope and gives me heart is that people are decrying this. If we had, and we have social media today, things go viral. Judy Mikovits' book is number one on Amazon. I may not understand where she's coming from with retroviruses, but her book is number one on Amazon. This is a different world today. I would call it mainstream to see through the COVID pack of lies. I would say the average person today, by and large, you know, there are some what I call COVID Davidians who believe everything and scold people about masks, but I think they're a minority. I really do. I think this is a different landscape.
You are correct. It is a different landscape, and I'm glad to see you up and fighting. And by the way, Celia Farber is the daughter, well, there are two daughters, of Barry Farber. And I first met Barry Farber back in 1970. I got a call. I was at home one day. I didn't have an unlisted number. And he called me and said, Gary. I said, yes. He said, Barry Farber down here on WOR. What are you doing? That's why I'm sitting here writing, Barry. He said, come on down. What for? Let's talk about rutabaga. Well, that started a 50-year friendship, 50 years. And Barry just passed at 80. He was a good friend. And what I loved about Barry Farber, loved, was because he never once apologized for being right. And he always was smarter in his arguments than the opposition. Man was brilliant, an absolutely unqualified genius. And it didn't hurt that he could speak over 30 languages and read them and speak them. And many, many great times that we had together. And he said, you know, don't go into a fight thinking you're going to lose and therefore just hope you don't get beaten to death. Go in there to fight. So that's the effort we have to take. We have to take the fight to the establishment, because at the end of the day, behind all their power, whether it's the Justice Department or CIA, Defense Department, these are cowards. They're stupid. They're not the brightest people in the world. And you just have to keep punching away till one day you find out that you're stronger, wiser, and more determined than what they gave you credit for. And in The Art of War, one of the things that was stated was never underestimate your opponent. And if you do, it's on you. And just remember, all of us can read, all of us can share information, all of us have strength of character. So let's use it in a unified way. And Syria is on PRN. Give people your show times on PRN, Syria.
The show is called The Whistleblower Newsroom. It's every Friday at 10 a.m., and I co-host it with Christina Borgeson. And, Gary, real quick, if I can just offer two short quotes of things my beloved departed father often said, two of my favorites. One of them was three words, that advice he gave me about journalism when I was 18 years old: penetrate the ostensible. And the other quote that I so love is this one: nothing is more fun than fighting evil.
He never mentioned those. Thank you for sharing that. Celia Farber, thank you for being on and bringing up questions that need to be raised. All the best.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you.
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.